Sharing the secrets of anti-aging, disease prevention, and holistic well-being, this is Green Medicine. Here's your host of Green Medicine, Dr. Jonathan Wright.
Welcome to Green Medicine on KTTH Radio. This is indeed Jonathan Wright, MD, Cordon, the University of Michigan anyway, from the Trauma Clinic in Tukwila. Well, can't listen to radio or watch television or look at the newspaper or anything like that without coronavirus being all over the place. And yes, I did unfortunately add to that last Saturday. But I'm going to do it again just because I want everybody to know that there have been cures. Yes, that's cures for viruses such as coronavirus in the past. Yes, way in the past. Dr. Frederick Klenner back in the 1940s was literally curing polio. No kidding. With high-dose vitamin C. But I mentioned that last week, so let me move on to this week's topic, which happens to be ultraviolet blood irradiation. Now, you know there's a fungus growing on a cloth. What happens to that fungus when it's left all day in the sunshine, huh? Yep, it fades and dies away. It's the ultraviolet frequencies, mostly. The very same ultraviolet light that's supposed to give us skin cancer if we don't bathe our bodies in sunscreen. Digression here, the May 2016 issue of Green Medicine Newsletter reported that it's poor diet. By that report was by a brilliant Israeli scientist with 144 citations. It's poor diet, not lack of sunscreen, that's responsible for the large majority of skin cancer. But we'll just leave that one alone and go back to extremely valuable, but since approximately 1950, almost completely ignored aspect of ultraviolet light. It kills germs. Yeah, we all knew that, so why isn't it implemented in healthcare? It kills germs. Not just fungi, but bacteria and viruses too. Of course, shining ultraviolet light on the outside of the body won't kill any germs on the inside of the body. The ultraviolet frequencies must go to where the germs are. And that's where ultraviolet blood irradiation really and literally shines. Ultraviolet blood irradiation began right here in Seattle. I am not kidding at all. For those of you who don't know it about it, you can look it up online. It began right here in Seattle in the 1920s. Oops, 100 years ago? Yeah. Scientist Emmett Knott, K-N-O-T-T, and Emmett is E-M-M-E-T-T, if you want to look this up online. E-M-M-E-T-T, Knott, K-N-O-T-T, knew that sunlight and ultraviolet light was being used successfully to treat infectious diseases. The 1903 Nobel Prize in Medicine was awarded to Dr. Niels Finsen for his discovery that artificial UV radiation of the skin cured tuberculosis in the skin. Dr. Knott reasoned that skin infections could be treated by irradiating the skin, why blood infections might be cured by irradiating the blood. What a thought. But a brilliant one for the time. Knott built and patented equipment that would remove a small amount of blood volume, anticoagulate it so no clots would form, expose it to ultraviolet B and ultraviolet C, and then pump the irradiated blood back into the body. His first report on the success of this treatment was published in 1934. Yeah. How is ultraviolet blood irradiation done? Well, approximately 300 cc's of blood, which is 5 to 7% of the total for an adult, is removed while being irradiated by ultraviolet light, and then it's put right back into the body. No kidding. Don't even donate blood. It just comes out, gets irradiated, and goes back in. This may be done just once or repeated several times, depending on the severity of the problem. The blood is then returned to the patient, and the process is repeated a number of times, depending on the seriousness of the condition. Didn't I say that already? Yes, I did. Sorry for repeating myself. How successful is ultraviolet blood irradiation treatment? In 1942, a professor, George Miley, at Hahnemann Hospital in Philadelphia, reported using ultraviolet blood irradiation, which he named the Knott technique. He reported it on 103 patients with life-threatening infections. At that time, antibiotic treatment was barely getting started. Remember, that's 1942. The only antibiotics were available were so-called sulfa drugs, and the large majority of these patients usually died. Dr. Miley classified the patients as early, moderately advanced, and close to death. The diagnosis included sepsis, bad infections from abortions, peritonitis, pneumonia, abscess in the appendix, pelvic abscess, wound infection, and similar conditions. He treated them all with ultraviolet blood irradiation and reported that all 20 of the patients in the early stages, all 20 recovered. 46 of 47 in the moderately advanced stages, which means it's time to go to the hospital. 46 of 47 of the moderately advanced patients fully recovered. 46 out of 47. And of the near-death patients, which means, oh my goodness, they were almost dead when they got into the hospital, 17 of 36, which is about 48% fully recovered, even though they were near death. They fully recovered after ultraviolet blood irradiation. In 1943, Professor Miley reported again on 40 individuals with generalized peritonitis, which is a usually fatal infection of the abdominal cavity. Now, all 23 of the moderately advanced ones, all 23, and 9 out of 17, which is a little bit more than 50%, of the nearly dead ones, nearly 50% recovered after blood irradiation. In 1947, here comes Professor Miley again. He reported more research on UBI and ultraviolet blood irradiation, which is termed UBI sometimes. He reported what might be the largest case series involving it. 445 individuals with a variety of life-threatening infections treated over 6 years of time. All, that's 100% of the early infection patients, 98% of the moderately advanced, which means they should be in the hospital now, and 45% of the moribund, which means nearly dead patients, 45% of the nearly dead patients recovered after treatment with Knott's ultraviolet blood irradiation. The only side effect noted was skin flushing that occurred in most treated patients and lasted up to 30 days. They also noted that the treatment of Staph aureus, Staphylococcus aureus, septicemia, with sulfa drugs actually reduced the effectiveness of ultraviolet blood irradiation. Now, here's Dr. Miley again from 1948. He reported excellent results with viral pneumonia. Uh-huh. Within a few days of one treatment, fever disappeared and symptoms abated. Now, there really are dozens of other research reports about effective treatments of non-infectious disease problems with ultraviolet blood irradiation. For all this information and more, please see a book titled Into the Light. That's Into the Light by Dr. William Douglas. That's Dr. William Douglas. You can find that book online, folks. Go to a used book search engine, put in Dr. William, or just put in William Douglas and put it Into the Light, and you'll find it and get it cheap if you want it. In his book, he reports effective treatment of polio and HIV viruses with ultraviolet blood irradiation, as well as descriptions of ultraviolet blood irradiation use in Africa, Russia, and elsewhere. The chapter on HIV includes a report on his own case written by a physician whose own HIV was successfully treated with ultraviolet blood irradiation. Dozens of reports documenting the effectiveness of ultraviolet blood irradiation against a wide variety of infections were published before 1950, many fewer after that. What happened? Well, it wasn't adverse effects. Dr. George Rebick of Shadyside Hospital in Pittsburgh reported, there have been no signs of harmful effects in approximately 4,000 blood irradiation treatments under my direct supervision at Shadyside Hospital in the last 5 years. So whatever happened? Two things happened to bring the use of ultraviolet blood irradiation to a dead halt. The first was the development of numerous antibiotics by, guess what, pharmaceutical companies who had them all patented. Yep, mm-hmm. So, with apparently no thought at all given to the very significant disruption of normal intestinal bacteria by antibiotics, kind of like collateral damage in wartime, or the possibility of microorganisms not at all liking being killed and fighting back to develop antibiotic resistance, antibiotics were pushed by patent medicine company representatives to physicians at their offices and conventions. Secondly, the American Medical Association actually went to war against ultraviolet blood irradiation with an article published in 1952. They focused their finding that blood irradiation didn't sterilize the blood. Well, of course it doesn't. Remember, you only take out a small quantity of blood, but somehow putting the ultraviolet into that small quantity which doesn't sterilize the whole darn bloodstream. It simply kills all the germs. But they said since the blood wasn't totally sterile, that ultraviolet blood irradiation couldn't be effective, despite all of these reports from Dr. Miley and elsewhere. Yeah. Why did the American Medical Association oppose a treatment which had been found so effective? Well, for insight, let's look at the Fitzgerald report to the U.S. Senate Interstate Commerce Committee, published on August 3rd, 1953, in the Congressional Record. Yes, you can look it up. And here's a verbatim excerpt before I shut up. There is reason to believe, this is from the Fitzgerald report, that the AMA has been hasty, capricious, arbitrary, and outright dishonest. The alleged machinations of Dr. Moore for the past 10 years, the treasurer of the AMA, could involve the AMA and others in an interstate conspiracy of alarming proportions. You can look that one up. Congressional Record, August 3rd, 1953, Fitzgerald report. Put that into your search engine. You will find it. So cooperation among the AMA, Big Pharma, and Los Federales to eliminate competition with approved therapies was known, well known, by 1953 and has unfortunately continued until now. Oh, my. Well, got a couple minutes left here almost. Maybe back to the future. In April 2016, researchers from Harvard University published a research review entitled Ultraviolet Blood Irradiation, Is It Time to Remember the Cure? And they called it the cure. They're from Harvard, remember. They must know something. The cure that time forgot? Here's one of the things they wrote. Ultraviolet blood irradiation was extensively used in the 1940s and 50s to treat many diseases, including septicemia, pneumonia, tuberculosis, polio. However, with the use of antibiotics, the use of ultraviolet blood irradiation declined and has now been called the cure that time forgot. That one is from Harvard. Harvard University, April 2016. So, folks, did you know that ultraviolet blood irradiation was used at Virginia Mason Hospital? Yes, until approximately 1950, when here comes all the antibiotics. Isn't it a shame? That none of our hospitals have ultraviolet blood irradiation equipment at all, even though it can actually cure so many infections. And even people who are nearly dead have about a 50% chance of being cured. Okay, I think it's probably time for me to shut up here and I'll go to a break. Please tell me if it isn't. And we'll be back with you.
Do you want to rid yourself of chronic conditions and feel vibrantly alive and optimistic about life? When your hormones are out of balance or you have food allergies, you just don't feel right, even when you're eating well, exercising, and getting adequate sleep. Meridian Valley Lab offers state-of-the-art diagnostic testing that can help you and your doctor balance your hormones and uncover underlying food allergies for optimal health. Together with medical director Dr. Jonathan Wright, MD, ND, Meridian Valley Lab has been taking laboratory testing to the next level since 1976. Call 855-405-TEST. If you've tried treating your symptoms but still don't feel well, it might be time to get tested. Take charge of your health by calling Meridian Valley Lab to schedule your hormone or food allergy test today. Call 855-405-TEST or visit MeridianValleyLab.com. That's 855-405-TEST or online at MeridianValleyLab.com.
We've all heard of using curcumin as a spice, but in the March issue of the Green Medicine newsletter, Dr. Wright gives a detailed look at the many health benefits that curcumin provides. He quotes a renowned doctor who shares that curcumin is by far one of the most powerful antioxidants known to science, hundreds of times more powerful than blueberries and dark chocolate. In addition, studies reveal that curcumin can lessen or eliminate depression, prevent Alzheimer's and other dementia, reduce obesity, and much more. Subscribe to the Green Medicine newsletter for the full article and for other health insights. Visit greenmedicinenewsletter.com or call 602-252-4477. That's 602-252-4477. The Green Medicine newsletter at greenmedicinenewsletter.com. Do you have questions about dietary supplements? Tawny at Tahoma Dispensary has more than 20 years of experience studying scientific literature that supports the many uses for dietary supplements. Tawny has a master's degree in nutrition, and she's definitely an expert in dietary supplements and the science behind them. If you have any general questions about supplements mentioned on today's show or any other supplement questions, call Tahoma Dispensary at 888-893-6878 and ask for Tawny. That's 888-893-6878. Supplements can be used to add nutrients to your diet to potentially lower your risk of health problems like osteoporosis or arthritis. If you have specific questions regarding nutrition and supplements for your particular situation, call Tawny at Tahoma Dispensary, 888-893-6878. That's 888-893-6878.
And now, back to Green Medicine, here's Dr. Jonathan Wright.
Yep, I guess I'm here, and you know what? Yeah, I made a mistake, been known to do that. Guess we all do, being human and everything. I forgot to give out the phone numbers here in case you want a question answered, because the main point of this program is not at all me ranting and raving about how come modern medicine isn't doing something that was known 100 years ago, or invented 100 years ago, and known 90 and 80 and 70 years ago. Main point is answering questions you may have about health. So here we go. Those call in or out numbers are 206-421-0770. That's 206-421-0770. And the 800 number is, of course, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. So if you happen to have any questions about any health thing, I will try to answer them to the best of my ability. I certainly am not omniscient about everything health. No way. But what we do focus on here, folks, is on the fact that we're all, we think anyway, humans. Might be a space alien in disguise somewhere out there, but anyway, all humans. And humans have been on planet Earth for good grief, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years. And so the chances are very, very, very good that if we use the molecules and energies of nature, which is what humans have lived in for all those years, to help with our health, that will do very, very, very little good and probably very, very little harm. I said that wrong, didn't I? Will do very, very little harm and probably a lot of good. And my experience in the practice of medicine is that's exactly correct. And that if we happen to use molecules never, ever found on planet Earth before, oh yes, those are called patent medicines, they're going to come, every one of them, with that long list of watch out for this that you hear at the end of every TV commercial. Oh yes, this patent medicine will help you this and this, but it'll do that, that, and that, and that to you. Who needs that? And it's totally predictable if we use a molecule that was never found on the planet where humans have been for all those years. Okay, time for me to shut up and listen to Lisa. Hi, Lisa, what's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Wright. I have a question about vitamin A. Can it help with aging eyes and light sensitivity, like when you're out in the sunlight and your eyes don't accommodate when you go back in?
Well, I've never heard anybody tell me it did that, and I've not seen any scientific publications. The one place where I definitely have seen vitamin A help eyes, if people who have things that don't want to heal in the eyes, and a few drops of vitamin A will usually help them to heal. But I'm sorry, ma'am, I haven't heard of the other.
Okay, I noticed that vitamin A is sold out everywhere. Is that because of the immune system people are buying it now, or...?
You better believe it, ma'am, because yeah. Vitamin A is one of the major stimulants for the immune system. And in fact, it is so important that the World Health Organization, if we happen to respect them, has said it now should be considered unethical to run any more so-called placebo-controlled trials, which means a placebo over here and vitamin A over there, because it is so well known that vitamin A prevents death from infection, that it would not be ethical to give people placebos anymore. That's why.
You know, it's interesting. You can't find any information anymore on the internet about vitamin A. If you put in vitamin A and vitamin E or vitamin D comes up, but it's like they've made it disappear from the internet.
Well, they've made a lot of things disappear from the internet, haven't they, Mary?
They have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm
not surprised.
When it comes back in stock again, I'll try some.
Yep.
Is the liquid the best form?
There is a type that's called micellized, which means that the vitamin A molecules are surrounded by little fatty acid particles, and that gets it to absorb better than any other kind, so you might want to look around for that.
Okay,
there
great.
Are different companies making micellized vitamin A.
Okay, thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and I wish I could tell you go eat carrots, because the carotene would transform itself into vitamin A. And that does work for many of us, but doggone it, the older we get, the less efficient our bodies get, where have we heard that one before, at making the vitamin A out of the carrots. And besides that, we'd have to eat a couple of bushels of carrots a day to make the amount of vitamin A that we can get from some vitamin A drops. So anyway, maybe some carrots. Okay, well, I should shut up about that and now listen to Jeannie. Hi, Jeannie. What's on your mind, ma'am?
Hi, yes, I go to Dr. Morical at your clinic. I just love her, but I called her on the phone appointment this week because Monday I came down with something. I didn't know what it was, a rash, and when we talked and I sent her a picture, she said, yeah, it's shingles.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry.
Yeah, bummer. So she gave me some ideas on what to do, and it's been helping so far.
Good.
And I feel a lot better than... The last 4 days were horrible, but what the problem is, my regular doctor, I called her because my leg, it happened on my left side of my body, and my leg, it was so painful, and it's been, you know, it's just every night, every day. So when I called, I said, is there any way I could get some pain pills that aren't real strong so I can sleep? And she gave me that, and then she gave me the antiviral prescription, but Dr. Morical had me taking lysine. And
sure, because lysine is antiviral.
Right, and the other thing is the licorice root, and I already had that by Herb Farm or whatever it is. So I've been doing that, but I don't want to take this antiviral the doctor gave me on top of this. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts is if you're doing well with what you're doing, I would keep that going and not add something to it, because that antiviral is very likely a patented molecule, and as I explained a little while ago, that uh-huh. means it's a molecule never found on planet Earth, and that means it's very susceptible to giving adverse effects, ma'am. So if you're doing okay with some things that don't give adverse effects, stay with it.
Okay. I was, you know, because I said, she went ahead and gave me the prescription, and my husband picked it up with the pain pill, which is very low dose, and it's fine. It's helped me sleep, but I don't want to get into this mixture of two things, and I read the side effects, and I just about died. And the pharmacist said, oh, that's the worst-case scenario. Don't believe everything.
Yeah, so, but guess what? There's somebody's got to be the worst case, and you never know who it is.
So my other question is, can you ever get shingles again once you've had it?
Rarely.
Rarely?
Because, yes, rarely, but it can happen if we all live old enough, because our immune systems in the middle of this shingles are busy fighting it and building up a resistance. But my goodness, okay. If you live another 50 years, we can't guarantee it wouldn't happen again.
Hope not. Anyway, I knew I'd get it someday because I had chickenpox so bad as a kid, and I got it really bad with the shingles. So at least it's not in my face or eyes or any other place. So you would advise my friend who's been debating about a shingle shot maybe to forego it, or what say you?
Well, I'd advise that they check for what the adjuvants are in. Adjuvant just means something added to
right.
the vaccine. And what you'll find is that the large majority of vaccines have aluminum, as it's pronounced in the UK,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
mercury. Oh, mm-hmm. what fun. And they're injected right along with the vaccine. So mm-hmm. I ask people to consider looking for adjuvant-free vaccines if they're going to use
okay.
them. And
okay.
Hopefully they'll be findable. Now, one other thing, ma'am, got to mention to you, because you may or may not have discussed this with Dr. Morical,
mm-hmm.
and that is, as you just said, that chickenpox loves to live in the tummy ever since we're little ones, and then it breaks out on the skin with shingles. Well, excuse mm-hmm. me, do you think it's been doing possibly some harm to the tummy while it's living there? Uh-huh. It's not just sitting there. It's not just sitting there asleep. That virus has to stay alive, doesn't it? So what we find frequently is that when we measure stomach acidity, and remember the acid is the output from the stomach lining where the shingles hides out, we frequently find that it's low in individuals, lower than optimal, I'll say. I don't mean none necessarily, but lower than optimal. And as the Mayo Clinic pointed out to us back in the 1930s, if we have a lower than optimal stomach acid, we're not as likely to live as long because we're not digesting things properly.
Okay. So I have my stomach acid checked, right?
When you're over this, yes, ma'am. Don't want to do it while you're having your symptoms and all.
I don't want to share. Oh, no, I know it's not catchable unless you have a child that is living with you that hasn't had chickenpox, right?
That's right. That's
right, okay. Well, I appreciate your help on this very much because I really didn't like wanting to take these pills, and that answered my question. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome, and thanks for calling and getting the word out about this, ma'am. Okay, well, Tim, we can probably get to your question. I might have to get to your answer after the break, but let's go for it. Is Tim there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, sir. Go for it.
Okay. I have a few questions for you.
Well, give me one of them, and I'll answer it as best I can before the break, and then if you're... after the break, if you want to get to the rest of your questions, we can. But we're getting close to one, so I'll shut up and listen to you. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead with the question, please, sir.
Okay. I have a daughter that's 52.
All right.
Yeah. I have a daughter that's age... And she's just starting menopause, she thinks.
Okay.
And has
Okay, sir. We'll have to go to a break now, and after the break, come back with the rest of the question. I'll be here. Hope you're there.
Have you heard about Tea Builder? Tea Builder contains 10 ingredients, each chosen because research studies reported that 9 of Tea Builder's 10 ingredients stimulates men's own bodies to produce more testosterone and or free testosterone. What does the 10th ingredient do? That 10th ingredient is nature's original molecular version of Viagra. Of course, Viagra is not only more potent, but also patentable, more expensive, and has potential adverse effects. Tea Builder, which helps men's bodies make more testosterone, is a safe, effective alternative, and it's not pricey. A 30-day supply, one bottle of 150 capsules, is $29.95. If your entire order is over $35, your shipping is free. Go to TahomaDispensary.com. That's TahomaDispensary.com. Or call 1-888-893-6878 for Tea Builder, the formulation that helps men's bodies make more testosterone. Call 1-888-893-6878.
Dr. Jonathan Wright's SunPal is a multivitamin, antioxidant, mineral, and amino acid formulation comprised of nutrients that exert a positive effect on the structure and function of skin. It significantly reduces the risk of skin cancer. This all-natural, research-based supplement was created based on the work of Neva Shapira, Ph.D. Dr. Shapira pointed out in her brilliant article in Nutrition Reviews that the melanoma skin cancer rate in Greece was less than the melanoma skin cancer rate in Australia. Both countries provide plenty of sunshine, so why the difference? Many of the nutrients in the Greek diet, which aren't present in the Australian diet, significantly reduce the risk of melanoma and other skin cancers. SunPal contains the majority of these missing ingredients. Dr. Wright supports this belief, so go ahead and enjoy the outdoors again this summer and every time you're outside. Go to TahomaDispensary.com. That's TahomaDispensary.com. Or call 1-888-893-6878 to order now. 1-888-893-6878.
If you want a better tan this summer, you need to check out Dr. Jonathan Wright's natural supplement, Tan Pal. It's loaded with amino acids, vitamins, and copper that increases the body's ability for melanin production. Even the fairest skinned people will be able to tan to a noticeable degree. Take advantage of your body's own natural tanning chemistry to prolong the length of time you spend in the sun before you start to turn pink. The latest science-determined nutrients will offer skin support and allow you to develop a healthy, natural glow. go to TahomaDispensary.com. TahomaDispensary.com or call 1-888-893-6878 to order now. That's 1-888-893-6878. Dr. Wright's natural supplement, TanPal. Order now by calling 1-888-893-6878. That's 1-888-893-6878. Fair skin folks, this is your ray of sunshine. TanPal. Call 1-888-893-6878.
You're listening to Green Medicine. Here's your host of Green Medicine, Dr. Jonathan Wright.
Okay, nice music. Now let's get back here to Tim, who's calling us from Gig Harbor. Hi, Tim. Tim, still there?
I had to answer the door, and I had my phone on and radio
yes.
on. So that's why there was a back and forth delay there. So I now have the radio off, and we can talk.
Oh, good. Well, it seems like we all get busy, and you did. So go for it, sir.
Okay. As I mentioned, my daughter called me the other day and said that she's 52 and thinks she's going through menopause because of the hot flashes that are pretty severe sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And she was being treated for some other things a year or so ago by a naturopath and went to her, and she said bioidentical hormone treatment would be appropriate. And she mentioned you have the option of cream, transdermal cream, or a patch. And I'm not a fan of the patch, and that's one of my questions is, I think you do transdermal, don't you, the cream?
No, sir, because either the patch or the transdermal goes on skin. And in the very early days of bioidentical hormones, which was the early 1980s, I had experience with some women who found that using the very same dose on skin over time worked less and less and less effectively well. And it wasn't just one woman, it was several of them. So I don't know where exactly I got the idea, but I thought maybe this shouldn't go on skin because it works for a while and then it tapers off. So let's put it on a mucous membrane. Now, a mucous membrane is an area such as lips. You look at it and you can see pink rather than skin color. And, of course, the mucous membrane that is most supported anyway by estrogen, progesterone, and so forth is the mucous membrane in the vaginal area and in the inner labia and so forth. That's mucous membrane. And besides that, those areas sometimes deteriorate without estrogen and progesterone. So let's have them try it there because it's such a small amount of cream, except sometimes in the case of progesterone, it's a little larger, but the estrogen is such a teensy amount of cream. And you know what, sir? The women switched to there, and bang, they started getting the results that they originally got when they very first put it on the skin. But those results continued and continued and continued and did not quit. And the only exception to that is some people develop an allergy or hypersensitivity to the stuff, but that's rare. So anyway, sir, no. Nothing goes on skin. It goes on mucous membrane if it's going to get in every day for the rest of its time of use, which for some ladies is going to be 40 or 50 years. And the reason it should be that long is there's a wonderful set of publications that tells us that the most important organ supported by estrogen for ladies is the brain. Yes, it's important for not having hot flashes, but the longer one goes without estrogen, the more likely one is to have cognitive decline if it's a woman. And the same thing for testosterone in men.
So how do you feel about the patch compared with the cream?
The patch goes on skin, sir. It will quit working. And you can't put a patch in the areas I was telling you about. I think the patch is not to be used for maximum effectiveness over time, because not that it's going to hurt anything, it just slowly quits working.
Okay, I want a confirmation on that. Good. And now, this cream, is that all the 8 or 9 hormones that you have a prescription made for?
No, sir, that would be a little irresponsible to put them all in the first prescription. Why? Because we need to make sure that that is the right dose for that woman. And that's judged both by her symptom, her response to her symptoms going away. I should have said that correctly. But it's also judged by measuring in the urine for a 24-hour urine collection. And why do we have to do it in urine, doctor? Why can't we do blood? And that's because the most potent of the three major estrogens as an anticarcinogen is almost impossible to measure in blood. How do I know? Because Dr. Longcope published a study on it back in the 1970s and showed that the half-life of this estrogen called estriol in blood can be as low as 6 seconds and as high, quote-unquote, as a minute and 10 seconds. So you cannot find that stuff in blood. So you have to collect the urine because it's so important to know not just about one estrogen. It's important to know about the pro- and anti-carcinogenic estrogens and are they balanced properly. And there's three major ones of those. And that can best be done in a 24-hour urine collection. And that's what many of the doctors who know what they're doing are using. And the others, they try to take shortcuts. It doesn't work out so well for the individual who's being shortcutted on, or the patient, let's call it, just simply because first we need to apply the estrogen from its own syringe. All ladies should have a tiny bit of testosterone. It's not as much as men, but good grief, women have testosterone just like men have a little bit of estrogen, and that needs to be in a separate syringe, and so does the progesterone. Why? Because it's a little unusual to find that the doctor, including me, has hit on exactly the right dose for every single hormone the very first time. Come on. We just don't usually do that. We need the follow-up test. Oh, this one needs to go down. This one needs to go up. And it usually does take a couple of follow-up tests, and they're not done every day. They're done at intervals in anywhere from 2 to 4 to 5 months. Usually does take 2 or 3 of those follow-ups to find out, well, here's the balance that this particular woman needs. And at that point, once we have found what balance that woman needs, then it can all go in one syringe.
So the urine test will get a woman started to tell you what to initially prescribe. Is that correct?
Oh, no. Not so, sir. Here's the thing. Look, if somebody's having hot flashes or they're actually going into menopause, I think it's a little silly to charge them money for doing a test where we know they're already going to menopause. So what we do is we start with very conservative doses of, again, it's usually estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and DHEA, those four. And yes, you're right, there are more than that that we have to consider later, particularly as we get older, if we're going to do a good job and feel the best. But even so, we can start with tiny doses, and the woman can herself adjust them upward and downward as long as they stay within certain ranges that the doctor and the pharmacist will explain, so that she adjusts them. Okay, my symptoms are now gone. I think I will stay here. So you start with a really conservative dose, upward, 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 a little bit at a time. Oh, my symptoms are gone. Now I'm going to stay here till I get my follow-up test.
So you prescribe a cream then with four of the down...
Well, to be real clear, sir, if we're starting bioidentical hormones for a woman, we start with four separate creams containing four separate sets of hormones. The estrogens, there are two of them, the anticarcinogen, and one which is a major one, but has a slight pro-carcinogenic tendency. Then there's this testosterone, which is a single item. There's DHEA, which is another single item, and progesterone is the third single item, and they all start separately until we find out what is best for that woman according to the test. What we're looking for is to not only receive symptoms, but get the symptoms in the range that a woman in her late 30s would have during the second half of the menstrual cycle. That's a very safe amount to put in there because it's been in her before. And we don't want to either underdo it or overdo it.
Okay. So then you... once you get past the initial stage, then you go to estriol?
No. The estriol is in with the estradiol to start with, sir. We don't want to leave that woman without an anticarcinogen from the very beginning. Estriol and estradiol are in together. The other three are in separately.
And now, do you test for the thyroid and the kidneys as part of the hormone replacement therapy?
Not the kidneys, but sometimes the thyroid. There are a lot of signs and symptoms of whether you need a thyroid test or not, so you go over that with your doctor. Kidneys, not particularly any need. You may be thinking of adrenal glands. Those are steroids just like the estrogen and testosterone. But there are also some body signs that say, hey, this woman has kind of weak adrenals. So we pay attention to that. One of the things that we do at our clinic, sir, is at least most of our doctors do, is we insist on a person coming in not only talk with the doctor, but also we do a physical exam. And no, we don't poke everybody in the prostate or do pap smears to everybody. We leave that to the gynecologist and the urologist. But we do a physical exam. Why? Because there are so many things you can learn from looking over the body that you would not learn any other way. And sometimes the person themselves doesn't know about them. Did you know if you have a little whitish coating on your tongue, the odds of you having candida growing in your gut, the yeast, are very, very high. So when the doctor says, stick out your tongue and say, ah, he's not just looking at your teeth and your tongue. He's looking for a whitish coating or not on your tongue. And he's also looking for a little groove down the center of the tongue. And some people have that. And that is an indication of certain vitamin deficiencies. So anyway, I'll shut up because we've got somebody waiting. But a physical exam is always important on the first visit. And
so
we
to
don't
find out things. With a full physical, do you also give, you want a blood draw so you can check a lot of different areas?
Sometimes, sir. Sometimes, sir, we do. But more often, the person will be asked to bring in any lab test they've had done in the last year. And many of us have had lab tests in the last year. And that way, we don't have to pay the extra money to get them duplicated. If they've had no tests for years, fine. Then we'll get some in advance. But that's not usually the case.
And I know I've taken a lot of time. I have one question for myself, if I can.
Well, really quick, sir.
Okay, really quick. Do you have any treatment for a low ejection fraction, such as supplements to raise the ATP?
Well, wait a minute. Ejection fraction usually means heart, and ATP,
yeah.
I'm not sure how that would be related. There are supplements which will increase ATP in every cell in the body. The major one is niacinamide, but I'm not sure how that's related to ejection fraction, sir. And we better go to our break. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, thank you for your time.
You're welcome, sir.
In the February issue of the Green Medicine Newsletter, the supplement strontium is explained in great detail. Studies show that strontium helps to improve bone density, decrease tooth sensitivity, and can help treat osteoporosis in a natural, healthy way. You may be wondering what to look for in a strontium supplement. Based on research, it appears that between 340 and 680 milligrams of elemental strontium works best. The smaller quantities will help prevent bone loss from occurring, while the larger doses can help treat osteoporosis. Talk to your doctor or schedule an appointment at the Tahoma Clinic to discuss what is right for you. To read the full article and find out the ins and outs of strontium, subscribe to the Green Medicine Newsletter by visiting greenmedicinenewsletter.com. That's greenmedicinenewsletter.com or call 602-252-4477. Schedule an appointment at the Tahoma Clinic to discuss what is right for you. Call 602-252-4477.
Do you want to rid yourself of chronic conditions and feel vibrantly alive and optimistic about life? When your hormones are out of balance or you have food allergies, you just don't feel right, even when you're eating well, exercising, and getting adequate sleep. Meridian Valley Lab offers state-of-the-art diagnostic testing that can help you and your doctor balance your hormones and uncover underlying food allergies for optimal health. Together with Medical Director Dr. Jonathan Wright, MD, ND, Meridian Valley Lab has been taking laboratory testing to the next level since 1976. Call 855-405-TEST. If you've tried treating your symptoms but still don't feel well, it might be time to get tested. Take charge of your health by calling Meridian Valley Lab to schedule your hormone or food allergy test today. Call 855-405-TEST or visit meridianvalleylab.com. That's 855-405-TEST or online at meridianvalleylab.com.
Sharing the secrets to anti-aging, disease prevention, and holistic well-being. You're listening to Green Medicine. Here's Dr. Jonathan Wright.
that music has disappeared kind of fast. I kind of like it, but that's the way it goes. I need to listen to the folks who are listening and have called in. And so I'll shut up and listen to Laura. Hi, Laura. What's on your mind, ma'am?
Oh, hi there, Dr. Wright. I'm so happy I found you on AM 770. Yahoo!
Okay, I'm glad you did too, ma'am. Thank you.
Yeah. So I have a question about NAC, glutathione. I know NAC makes glutathione, if I understand it correctly. And I'm wondering, which is the better one to take, the NAC or just go directly to the glutathione for supplementation? For rest, I guess it's really good for respiratory and inflammatory. And so that's one question. And then is it useful for preventing respiratory infection and or treating it? Or, you know, what is it the best, you know, what is it the most useful for? And then my third question is, is it also useful for nervous system, like neuropathy type stuff?
Okay. Well, I'm not sure I can remember all those, so I'll try to take them backwards because
that's what's
in memory. Thank you. Appreciate that. I can use all the help I can get a lot of times. Okay. Insofar as the question about preventing respiratory infections, ma'am, the best thing for doing that in the whole human body is vitamin A. Vitamin A cuts down risk of infection in the lungs, the sinuses, but it does cut down the risk in the whole body. But the place where it really shines is in the respiratory area, and that's not beta carotene. That's good old vitamin A. Now, I'm not saying don't take any NAC, but I'd say if you're looking for protection in those respiratory areas, make sure your vitamin A is where it belongs. And what's not generally known is that if we take too much vitamin A, it raises our cerebrospinal fluid pressure. That's that fluid inside the brain and spinal cord. And it gives us a headache. So basically, if we're taking too much vitamin A and we start getting headaches, we already know we're taking more than that one body needs. And for most adults can tolerate extremely well, and they only should not tolerate it if they're planning to get pregnant, 50,000 units of vitamin A a day. I am not kidding. There's research from way ago that had some people in their 20s with faces full of acne. The women were taking 400,000 units a day. I am not kidding you. And the men were taking 500,000 units a day. And that really helped to clear up their acne, and practically nobody got headaches. But I don't recommend going there. I definitely don't. Okay, that was the one thing on the respiratory. Now, the second thing, let me tell you about another use of NAC. And I don't recommend taking antibiotics much at all, but if a person ever does feel that they're in a situation where they must take antibiotics, guess what? NAC mitigates against a lot of the problems that antibiotics cause. I wish it would stop the antibiotics from killing the good germs as well as the bad germs. It doesn't do that, but it mitigates many of the other problems. Okay, ma'am, remind me of another thing you asked.
Just a follow-up on that. So do you think that NAC should be used for any antibiotics, like for UTI or anything like that, too,
Yes, ma'am. Anytime you use an antibiotic, the NAC is going to mitigate. But let's turn to that UTI. You probably know and maybe just forgot that D-mannose will clear up 85 to 90% of all urinary tract infections within 24 hours, usually, simply because D-mannose keeps that little E. coli, which causes 85 to 90% of all urinary tract infections, from sticking to the walls of the urinary tract. That was researched back in 1980, of all things. And I'm sorry to boast, but we were the very first at Tahoma Clinic to put it into clinical use. And that's why it spread from there to all the health food stores in the country, because none of us could put a patent on it. So it really spread fast, and that's why you find it in every health food store. Your turn.
Yeah. I actually, I'm an RN, actually. I'm a home health nurse, and I do recommend D-mannose for all of my catheter patients, for sure.
You betcha.
But sometimes they still get UTIs no matter what, and I just say increase the dose of D-mannose. And sometimes that has helped, and sometimes it hasn't.
Okay, ma'am.
Some people are getting some crazy bugs, really.
They're really atypical. Let me tell you what else you can tell your patients. At the Mayo Clinic, no less, in the mid-1920s, from there came a publication on how to get rid of 100% of all urinary tract infections. What they did was to have people use potassium iodide, because potassium iodide kills any germ that it contacts. It doesn't care what the germ is, virus, bacteria, whatever it may be. And if we take a honking big dose of potassium iodide for 3 days and then quit, because we could suppress our thyroids, as we both learned in school, if we took too much potassium iodide for too long. But if we take, for example, for the average size adult, let's say it's a woman, it's usually 12 drops. Let's say it's a man, it's usually 15 drops. It's put into water, taken every 4 hours. That's so much, except while we're asleep, of course. It's so much iodide, the body doesn't want it all. And guess what? It puts it all in the urine. And the urine, where's that land? In the bladder, and it kills all the germs. And so the reason we don't have to get up at night to take it, because the bladder's holding on to the iodine in the water and killing all the germs. And so if we happen to get up at night to urinate, then we should swallow some more. But we never want to do that for more than 3 days, or we have a risk of suppressing our thyroid. But
okay.
We only usually need it
so,
for two or three
so
days.
So do you think it's okay even with people that have known hypothyroid or hyperthyroid, you know,
Yes, ma'am.
It's okay for anybody, pretty much?
Yes. If they have hypothyroid and appropriately treated with hopefully whole thyroid, and if not the Synthroid and Cytomel, then it's not going to suppress in 3 days, but it sure will if you kept it up for a couple of weeks.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. That's great to know. Thank you. So you do recommend NAC as well, and what would be the dosage for a conjunct treatment for an infection? What would that be? Or would you want glutathione instead of the NAC? Which do you prefer?
Well, if that infection's been treated with antibiotics, I want NAC because it stops the antibiotic side effects. If it's not been treated with antibiotics and there's an infection, I'd go with the glutathione because the body might not be as good at making its own glutathione during that time.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great to know. You know, I do, sometimes I get patients that are open to it and sometimes people just don't want to hear it at all. And, you know, that's okay. You know,
sure.
Not everybody's willing to listen, but, I do appreciate, you know, all the things I've learned from you, and a lot of my patients have, and me too. You know, I've made changes because
of your
teaching. And as I don't need to take this on the air, but I also you had put out an article a couple months ago about RNA, right? RNA treatment.
Oh, you bet I did. Green Medicine Newsletter, two issues.
Where do you get that, and what's the best dosage?
Okay. I happen to get mine from the Toma Dispensary, but I'm sure it's on the shelf in most of the natural food stores. And the doc who pioneered all this, and then we'll both have to go to the next caller here. But anyway, the doc who pioneered this, Dr. Benjamin Frank, he did not use enormous doses. He was using sometimes 100 to 200 milligrams, and he would get as high sometimes as 2 grams if he was really trying to get an effect. But a gram a day is usually not enough for most of us. Thanks so much,
200
Carl,
to 1 gram.
In.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Yep, you're welcome. Bye. Okay, let's see. Someone's calling us from Oak Harbor. We have to go as fast as we can before the end of the program, but hopefully we'll get your answer.
Yes, I would like to ask a question on blood work and an urge to urinate. About a couple of months ago, you had mentioned it was just like 3 initials, and I can't find where I wrote that. Do you have any idea?
Well, I'm sorry. Is this a test you're talking about?
Yeah, you were at work, and you have found that if they test for that and it's low in it, if they add something to her something, then it works.
It works for what, ma'am? Urinary tract infection, did you say?
Yeah, it's just the urge to urinate. Now, most of the time, I'm just fine. It's when I go to the bathroom, it's like if I can't get there instantly,
Okay, ma'am. I hear you now. There are two things that can be behind that. One of them, believe it or not, is bedwetting. In fact, a professor up in Canada, he rounded up a whole bunch of kids and teenagers with bedwetting problems, tested them all for food allergies. Every one of them was food allergic. They quit eating their foods and they quit wetting the bed. I am not kidding you.
Okay,
that's one. It's like bedwetting, so watch out for food allergies. The second thing is if we happen to be low on magnesium, then muscles spasm easier, and the bladder is just a big old muscle, as we all know. So sometimes it's a magnesium problem. Now, here's the thing. Even though it may be a magnesium problem, and sometimes we swallow that magnesium or rub it in the form of a gel or something, it don't work. Why? Because when the muscle gets low enough in magnesium, then the magnesium can't get back into the muscle cell. There's a transporter that creates a concentration of way more magnesium ions inside of the cell than are present outside of the cell, and that transporter will stop working if we go low enough on magnesium for long enough. And for that, the remedy is a rapid magnesium push intravenously that your physician must give you. But what that does is forces it back into the cell again, and now we quit having those spasms. So there's those two things, intracellular magnesium deficiency and food allergy, that will lead to this.
Great. Okay. Well, I appreciate your help so much. I appreciate your answers.
Okay. Well, I hope it does some good for you, and thank you for helping to get the word out about a natural approach to health and a health problem.
Amen.
And thank you so much for listening. Now, we're getting right close to the end of the program, so I'm not going to look around for anybody with any more questions, even though there aren't any, I don't think, just simply because I hate to cut people off in the middle of things, even though, yeah, we got to do it because it's radio time. So, let's see. Yep, we got about 3-4 minutes before the end of the program, something like that. So, I'm going to go back to the opening rant and rave, or whatever you'd like to call it, and point out that coronavirus, like any other virus, is susceptible to intravenous blood irradiation, or I should say ultraviolet blood irradiation. I said that one wrong. And so if any of our hospitals would ever decide to become re-equipped, as one of our Seattle hospitals was in the 1940s, with ultraviolet blood irradiation equipment, and it's not all that pricey if you compare it to other hospital equipment, you know, they'd be curing coronavirus left and right. And as I mentioned, in all those studies, they always told us about the moribund people, which means nearly dead. And the ultraviolet blood irradiation cured half of the nearly dead people from whatever their virus or bacteria or whatever it was. Why and when? Why not and when are our mainstream medical folks going to read all this research? I don't care if it's from the 40s. It worked then. It'll work now. And implement it. We don't have to go with patent medicines every time. At least I don't think we do. And you take out some blood. Again, it's not a great deal of blood, if you remember that. And you irradiate it as it comes out. It goes back in. And even if it's moribund, near dead, a 50% chance. And the ones who are sick enough to need to go to the hospital but aren't moribund, my goodness, they're up there in the percentages. Definitely way over 50%, not 100%, but way over 50% in curing the problem. Come on, it's in the medical journals. There's books about this. When will they ever learn? I didn't learn it in medical school either, but that doesn't mean it can't be learned and applied, especially when, if you remember, that one doctor reported on 4,000 people and there were no adverse effects. The doc reporting from Shadyside Hospital in Pennsylvania, ultraviolet blood irradiation can help fix fungi, bacterial, and viral infections. So hopefully, one of our hospitals just might consider rushing out and getting some ultraviolet blood irradiation equipment and putting it to use at their hospital. Yep. It would do some good for a lot of people, and I surely do hope it happens. Anyway, time for me to shut up until next week. I think it is, anyway. Yep, there comes that music. So thank you all for listening, and we'll be back here at 3 p.m. next Saturday.